and welcome to another episode of the Microsoft Spotlight Podcast. Today, it's just me, as my other two co-hosts are currently doing their jobs. You know, everyone has to pay their bills. So today, I am joined by Shashi Agarwal. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. And kudos to you for pronouncing my name almost correctly. So,
Exactly. Nice to I'm trying to break the duck that I have with this running joke that I say everyone's name badly. So, you know, getting it right first time, you know, it's perfect for me. And hopefully, I would say this is like the first of three episodes I'm doing this, just today. So I'm hoping that every single one, I want to have it spot on. And then, yeah, I'll be happy then. I can retire a happy man.
Great. Great to hear.
So can you just tell me a little bit about yourself?
Of course, yeah. So I'm Shashi Kulkarni Agarwal, originally Indian. I've been brought up over there in a place called Bangalore, which is in the south of India, in a state called Karnataka. So I moved here to the Netherlands about 5 years ago, nearly. And I also joined Microsoft 3.5 years ago. So I work as a technology specialist for security. So cybersecurity has been my domain in the last, a decade almost. I'm very passionate about cybersecurity. And now with the age of AI, I think, you know, it's very exciting actually to be a part of this journey and landscape. I'm also passionate a lot about data insights, right? So everything to do with data-driven culture, I think that really is something that I'm passionate about. And also to do with D&I, right? So diversity and inclusion is something that's very close to my heart. So I always feel that, you know, you should do something that changes the world a little bit. That's a little bit about me. I live here together with my husband in Amsterdam. And I'm in the process of learning Dutch very, very slowly. But apart from that, for the Indian languages, I think I speak about 5 or 6 different languages. So Dutch is going to happen sometime. So that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, I do like Amsterdam. I mean, I've been to IT conference over there. It's like many moons ago now when it used to run. It was called Office 365 Engage. It actually run in Haarlem.
Yeah.
Which is obviously a lovely part of Amsterdam. Just about 30 minutes drive north. So yeah, it's a place I'd love to go and visit again sometime in the future.
Great to hear. And let me know when you're here. I think it's one of the most beautiful places to be and even to visit. I think it's one of the most beautiful cities. So, yeah.
Yes, definitely. So let's get into it then. So as you've just already mentioned, you're an expat. Obviously, you're originally from India. So what drove you to basically move from India over to Amsterdam? Because, you know, what started that mindset of basically you want to basically spread your wings? And where did that come from? Did it come from like being in school and want to explore the world, or, you know, just tell me.
Definitely. So even before Netherlands, I've lived in Indonesia, in Jakarta for a couple of years. And traveling is something that I'm really passionate about, right? I mean, even generally, not, you know, just to live, but even just to, you know, kind of meet new people, understand new cultures. That's something that's always been very close to my heart. And talking about my family and friends, I think most of my family is, you know, also abroad. We have a lot of, you know, family in India as well. So I just felt like, okay, it's really, you know, time to kind of explore and find what's, you know, available out there. And yeah, fortunately, it also turned out that my husband actually moved here a few months before me for a job here in the Netherlands. And that was one of the sole reasons that, you know, I also felt like, okay, I'm ready for it now. And I always have been in cybersecurity. So I was very particular that, you know, I want to continue my journey there. There's, you know, a lot that I can actually learn and contribute. Let's say things just worked out, I believe. So both Netherlands and cybersecurity, and together with my family, also close to some family that I have in Germany. So yeah, geographically and professionally, I think things worked out. So that's actually the reason I, you know, came here initially.
Okay, cool. So what was it like at school growing up? I mean, what got you into, you know, IT and wanted to pursue a career path? I mean, did you have that drive to go into the world of tech, or was it you want to be like an astronaut or something else?
That's a great question. And I think, talking about my childhood, of course, it's, it's favorite part for most of us, I think. But even I had a great childhood, right? So within my family, we had different professions, right? Like both my dad and mom have always been very, particular that, you know, career is actually a very integral part of our lives. So my mom was actually, she was a professor of biochemistry, and my dad was an engineer. But we had different, I think we had so many different fields within my cousins and uncles and aunts and stuff like that. But I think by the time I actually finished school and started college, IT was actually, you know, the new thing. So I said, okay, this is something that, you know, is going to make life simple, right? Basically. So that was my initial interest towards IT. So I decided to kind of also, you know, master at information technology and computer science and that kind of stuff. But then cybersecurity actually happened as, you know, let's say incidentally, because I got this opportunity for, you know, being a Java developer and stuff like that. But I also got an opportunity to start my career with risk and compliance and governance and stuff like that. So as a person, I think I really resonated with the importance of, let's say, a governance or a risk platform for any organization. And it was kind of a no-brainer for me to be like, okay, I'm going to pick the cybersecurity, you know, challenge. So that's how I started with, you know, a very inquisitive mind, let's say, in the beginning. But over the years, I just started to really fall in love with this, you know, this ocean, you know, of the field that it is. So, yeah, I think, yeah, it's so many different things, right? Like, if I have to really talk about my childhood, I think, yeah, we all wanted to be so many different things, right? I remember that I wanted to become an astronaut. Then I wanted to become a teacher. Then I wanted to become a psychologist. But I think, yeah, towards the end of school is when I got to know that, okay, my real calling is IT, and that's something that I would really want to pursue as a mainstream. But I still do keep, you know, in touch with psychology and, you know, other things as much as possible as a hobby or on the sides. So, yeah.
That's wicked. So, I mean, moving abroad is not something that I've ever, you know, envisioned myself doing. I mean, yes, you're probably at the core to probably go and work in Seattle for Microsoft would be, you know, very big one, but with our family and stuff over in the UK, I don't think that basically ever happened. But you know, we're all here to basically live our lives the way we want to live it. So with obviously growing up then, you know, as you say, you kind of fell into IT. What was like the opportunities in school? Did you have like many computers or technology there available?
Yeah, fortunately, I think India is a very diverse country, right? So there are, you know, so many different flavors of India that, you know, people have heard of and seen of and lived as well. But fortunately, the kind of environment that I grew up in was actually very progressive, let's say, right? Even to be fair, I'm not being biased, but I think it was very progressive, even from the family that I came in, and also my friends and also the school, and more importantly, the city, right? The city of Bangalore itself, I think, has always been way ahead of time, right? And education, I think, in the, you know, in most parts of India, of course, but even for the South Indian culture, education is actually given a lot of importance, right? It's also growing, you know, even now, but even when I was a child, it was always something that we did not take that as, you know, as something that's not important. We always gave a lot of importance to our education and career and what we want to do from a professional perspective. So yes, I did actually go to a pretty, really good school with, yeah, I was blessed to have one of the, you know, the best set of teachers, let's say, right? So I often fell in love with, you know, chemistry and biology and geography. So I always felt that, you know, there's so much to do, there's so much to learn. And even as a child, I remember that, you know, every day is an opportunity. This is something that I feel even now, right? So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, every day and every minute and everything is an opportunity if we make the most of it. So I think I had that drive back, you know, when I was, you know, in school as well. And that just grew and grew and grew in college. And I was also blessed to have, you know, parents that were so supportive to actually, you know, make my dreams come true, send me to the right college, send me to the right school, and also support in the professional aspect. So, yeah, I think it's been pretty smooth. So, yeah, always been motivated this way.
And so for me, like, obviously, at school, I mean, I'll say I didn't really have a teacher that kind of, you know, someone that kind of like drove me, kind of like gave me a bit of focus. I mean, it wasn't until basically I started my first actual role in IT where I met a particular person who gave me a kick of the ass and got me going in the world of IT. Because like, school life for me was just, yeah, I didn't like it. I mean, yes, I found my passion for wanting to go into IT, but in my family, like my father's like an ex-military man. He's driven lorries all his life. My mother was basically a dinner lady at the school that I went to. So for me, I'm kind of the anonymy in my family because my brother went to the army as well. My sister works in like a local supermarket. So in the dynamic in my family, I'm the only one that's gone out and done like a proper professional career. And I've done all that by just literally having that drive as soon as I left school because I knew what I wanted to do. But in my school, I wouldn't say that the opportunities were there. I mean, my highest grade and my GCSEs was in IT. All my other grades were absolutely shocking, and I won't go into them because they're diabolical. But yeah, I mean, I think Well, you know, if you have a passion and want to really succeed in something, you have to have that drive. Yes, it's also good to have mentors as well, that both people that push you along. I think me having my first role and having that particular, say, mentor helped me massively get in the world of IT and become the IT architect I am today.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the main inspirations or, you know, influential persons in my life was always my mom, right? Because she was a professor herself. So academics was something that was like an everyday, you know, conversation, right? And she was very involved with me when I was in school. And, you know, it was always like, you know, whatever you do, you do it really well or you give it your best shot, right? That's something that I think, she kind of instilled in me. And yeah, although she was, you know, in biochemistry, I think she always inspired me to be like an independent woman, right? And that's not something that we see very too much, at least in certain countries even now. It's changing, of course, but I think there's still a long way to go. But when it comes to IT, I think, yeah, there were several people like my cousins and, you know, people who were a little older than me. And IT was also kind of the new thing back then. And I felt like, okay, I really want to study this because it's really, you know, it's at the end of the day, it makes humans' life simple, right? And technology just grew and grew and grew. So I think it was several different factors actually to, bring me into IT, let's say.
Awesome. So obviously, spoke a little bit about your past. Let's focus about, you know, what you're currently doing. I mean, what's your job role entail? I mean, in the about 10 episodes, we've had nearly every single person's from Microsoft and they've all done like different jobs. So just tell me more about what you do day to day.
Yeah, of course. So I'm a technology specialist for cybersecurity. That's my role, basically. So what I actually do is, you know, everything to do with Microsoft cybersecurity solutions, right? I mean, it's a very fast evolving kind of a domain, right? There's also AI now. So everything is really rapidly increasing on a daily basis from what Microsoft actually provides for the, you know, for the world, let's say. So my responsibility is to actually help the customers, you know, in the Netherlands, mostly for the manufacturing sector, in their digital transformation journey, right? So everything to do with cloud security, threat protection, and this kind of stuff. I help understand, what their architecture is, where they are with the digital transformation, what's on cloud, what's on-prem, what are their security priorities, you know, going forward. I try to understand all that and, you know, also envision them with what Microsoft has to offer. And then, guide them through that journey, basically. So that's, to put it in layman's terms, I think that's my roles and responsibilities mainly.
And does it keep you happy, what you're doing?
Yes, of course. Priority.
It gets you out of bed in the morning because you love working for the big blue badge and the mothership.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, I've been doing this for 3.5 years now. And I always wonder that should it get monotonous? And fortunately, I never felt that it's monotonous, right? I'm equally excited every day. And that's also because the organization is very dynamic. And I think the role itself and the team and, you know, what we do with customers is a very, very dynamic kind of a setup. So you never feel like you're doing the same thing week after week or month after month, right? And that's, I think, really, it's a very important litmus test that you have to go through that, hey, are you still excited or not? Because if you are, then I think you're in the right place, right? And that's how I feel. So,
How diverse is your team? Obviously, we touched on, you know, diversity, inclusion, obviously a passion of yours. So what's the diversity like in your actual team that you're working in?
Oh, that's a great question. I love to answer this question, right? So I think we here in the Microsoft Netherlands, we are one of the most diverse teams that we have. So we are a team of 14, 15 people, and we have people coming in from 7 or 8 different countries, right? So I'm really proud to be a part of the team where diversity, we live diversity, right? It's not just about saying things about D&I, but actually doing D&I, right? We are, as Microsoft Netherlands, I think we are, way ahead of the curve, and we are really ahead compared to a lot of organizations on making sure diversity and inclusion is in place. And I think I'm really fortunate to be a part of this team where you have a lot of, you have more women than men at this point of time. And we also have people from several different countries, several different age groups, also coming in from different organizations and experiences. So whenever I talk about diversity, I always feel diversity is not just a, cultural diversity, right? It has to be really about so many things, so many different factors. So and I also think our team is kind of an inspiration to several other teams, right? To actually, why can't you be like this? I think it always helps to build a very healthy team, because you get the best ideas, you have, you know, different people working in different ways. So yeah, there's only the benefit that I think there is. So yeah.
So you mentioned in the show notes to me that obviously you've endorsed yourself into a lot of Microsoft's initiatives for like supporting women in tech. You want to drive into some of them, what you've been doing?
Yes, absolutely. So when I joined Microsoft, I think even during my interview, right? So this was one of the questions or one of the things that I, you know, made sure that before I made the decision to actually join Microsoft, I wanted to make sure that D&I is given the right priority and, you know, we have room to kind of contribute towards that space. And fortunately, that was the case, right? So we have several different, you know, employee resource groups. So we have things for like culture diversity. We also have things for gender equality. We have things for LGBTQA+ and stuff. So yeah, I always felt very passionate about the culture aspect and the gender equality aspect. So I'm quite active in this field. I belong to, you know, both of these teams. So whether it's running, you know, Women's Day workshops, or Women's Day programs on an annual basis, or, you know, even attending the Women in Tech conference, also representing Microsoft, having Microsoft booth over there. I've also organized certain workshops, you know, such as the Intercultural Communication Workshop. I can go on about this topic, right? But I make sure that, you know,
this is what this podcast is all for.
Yeah, I make sure that, you know, people don't forget D&I, right? It's not something that you just do once in a year and disappear, right? It's something that it's like a best practice. That's the way I look at it. And I recently also read this book called The Culture Map and I loved it. So I was just, you know, telling people about it to be like, hey, if you haven't picked it up, pick it up today and read it, because it's really relevant to the world and, you know, to the organization that we are a part of. So yeah, I think it's every few months I'm always doing something with D&I, right? Either internally at Microsoft or outside, or talking to customers and partners about it, or yeah, because I feel there's an inner drive towards it, and I feel that I really can contribute to making that the world a little bit better from this aspect. So yeah, I can really go on about this topic. It's one of my favorite topics to talk about. But these are some of the examples and yeah, the initiatives that I'm involved in.
I mean, it's been obviously proven, like having a diverse team basically helps a lot with tackling problems. I mean, it's, you know, because you have that different approach, you have different mindsets, you have different people, way of people attacking things. So having a very much diverse team and then people work together, you know, is massively important for any organization to succeed.
Yeah, I really think so, right? Because it helps you to kind of think out of the box a little bit, right? You know, back in the day, I've also been, when I used to work in organizations with just, say, back in India, in some organizations, I've been a part of just, you know, just Indians around me, or, you know, doing things in a similar way with similar age groups and stuff like that. Not that that's not a good strategy. It is a good strategy depending on the, you know, let's say the kind of work that you do, right? But I always feel there is more benefit and, you know, more that you can get out of a team with a diverse set of people, right? Because there is no boundaries, right? Like I do something very differently and, you know, my colleague does something very differently. And that could be for a whole lot of reasons, right? It could be the age difference. It could be the previous organizations that they come from, or it could be the kind of, you know, it's just their personal flavor, right? On how they actually pick up a task and execute it. So I really think that that boundary is actually cut off. At least it's pushed a little farther away, let's say. And that's the best part of the diverse team. Sometimes it can also be a little bit of a challenge, right? Like you're like, hey, this is very common to me and maybe it's not common to a different, you know, culture. But that's only in the beginning, right? I mean, if you have the patience to kind of get over that and establish that, you know, let's say the good rhythm with one another, I think there's only beneficial stuff that's coming out. I have never heard so far that a diverse team is not able to function because it's a diverse team. Maybe there are different factors, but I always, you know, have witnessed that it probably gets the best out of the team, best out of the people, and also pushes you a little bit more, right? So that's kind of the, yeah, it's a win-win situation, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, so I'll do a lot of work within Fujitsu about diversity, equality, inclusion, because, you know, I do this podcast, Fujitsu, I'm very much aware of that because I make it very known that I do this podcast. So, you know, I got involved with the Women's Business Network, which is our internal women in tech group, and just basically, you know, anything that I basically take from this podcast, I think, you know, that's probably a good idea to put into our organization. I'll literally throw it straight in there. So there's connections that I've basically made for the group that have helped. I just think that, you know, a lot of work has been done to support more women to get into tech, but a lot more needs to happen.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, this podcast will continue to run for however long it takes, or however long, you know, I plan to basically sit here in this room having these conversations, because it is important to basically put a spotlight on people that are doing fantastic work, not just in the community, but also within the organizations as well. Because, you know, in the communities, you can see it, you know, especially if you're very much involved. But when you know, when someone's doing it in their own organization, you don't see it because you're not a part of that. Yep. So I think it's important that, you know, these conversations are had so people then can take, you know, ideas from that conversation, going, oh, you know, that would be good to, you know, implement into my organization and start something up there. I mean, I'm going to an event the 14th of October. Mm-hmm. It's called the South Coast Summit in the UK. Okay. And that'll be our third year there as the podcast. And basically the session that we're doing this year is Let's Talk About Change. So talking about what we can do to basically build a inclusive community within a business. So I've got someone from my own organization, Fujitsu, and I'm talking about what we've done internally, because I'm basically one of the male ally champions. So there's two of us. We're doing like a leader story in September sometime, so the end of this month. I'm going to be basically talking to the whole business about, you know, why it's important to be a male ally, what, you know, what I get from it, and what, you know, other people get from it as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's just, you know, it very much depends on the person that you are. I mean, say diversity for me, I come from a diverse background. My granddad's Jamaican, my nan's white, but on my dad's side they're all Irish, so I've got that, you know, that very much that European Caribbean mix all going on in my life. So you have to have an understanding, because everyone sees negativity in the world that happens on a regular basis. Even in my personal life, I've seen, you know, negative comments. But, you know, we all have to do something to basically change that behavior.
Yeah, of course. And I'm really, really, you know, really happy that, you know, you mentioned the male ally part of it, because I think that's something that's not very correctly understood by a lot of people, right? So whenever we're doing these women initiatives, it's always, you see majority women participating, right? And the men are like, they want to participate, but they're not sure, or you have fewer in numbers and stuff like that. So I think you're a great example, right, to actually inspire people that, you know, this is really not about men and women, right? I mean, I don't look at it that way at all. When we talk about equality, it just means that maybe the women need a little bit of a push, but we are not against men, right? We are pro everyone. And that's something that needs to be understood correctly whenever we talk about this, you know, sensitive subject. And male allies is something that I, you know, we are also trying to promote and get more men involved when we do these initiatives in Microsoft. But yeah, you're a, you know, living example of, yeah, just do it, right? I mean, let's not think about it, but just do it and make the change happen. So kudos to you for that.
I mean, the biggest example I've got is there's the Women in Teams community. Mm-hmm. And obviously from the name, you think it's just basically, you know, it's just for women, but it's not. Yeah. Well, I'm actually a part of that community. I mean, I joined their community call last week. And as soon as I did, there was another male on that particular call, and he reached out to me straight away on LinkedIn and went, all right, it's nice to see there's other males supporting this initiative. One, well, yes, because just because it has the word women or woman or whatever doesn't mean it isn't open and inclusive to everyone. And that's the one thing that, you know, I've tried to basically say on this podcast multiple times and battle against, because, you know, I actually spoke at the International Women's Conference a few months ago. I mean, when I was looking at the speaker list, I was going down and I can't see many males on this list. It's quite a lot of women, but there was like men included into it, but I was doing like, you know, joint sessions with other people, so their names weren't actually listed. But yeah, it's important that, you know, people understand that, yeah, there is lots of communities out there for women, but men are also welcome as well. I mean, the one thing I'll keep meaning to do is reaching out to my local women in our tech group based in Birmingham, and actually just going and attending one of their sessions. I mean, I look at some of the content, I mean, you know, I'll go and sit and listen to that, because I don't know nothing about it, so I can learn something new. And it's just, be a male ally, you know, don't be scared to, you know, jump in there, because at the end of the day, as, you know, the majority, you know, part of, you know, IT is males, we see obviously some of the negativity that women face. And our last guest, Jess, I think I basically put a post down on LinkedIn about a session that she did where she got a lot of people, a lot of women, to basically submit some of the negative comments they've experienced. I mean, I literally like, sat there reading them and my jaw just dropped. I was like, I can't believe that. So someone's actually said that. So if we had more males supporting more women within the businesses, then comments probably would never have happened.
Yeah, that's so true, right? And sometimes I think the concept may be a bit more complicated in the head, but when you actually, you know, practically put it into practice, it's not that, it's not that difficult, right? We just really need people who are passionate and, you know, they can make a difference here. Yeah.
So, I mean, I've spoken to quite a few guests from the Netherlands in recent years. I mean, obviously we've got a common connection on LinkedIn, Femke, and obviously she runs the Dutch Women in Tech.
Yeah.
So I know obviously in the Netherlands there's a lot of support for more women in tech. Do you think there is anything else that can be done to get more women involved, or do you think what's currently in place is enough?
My honest opinion is that there's always, you know, a necessity to do more and more, right? Because it's something that we are making a change, but we still have a long way to go, or at least we have some way to go to actually make that, you know, equality happen one fine day, right? Of course, yeah, I mean, Femke, and we have so many other women leaders as well who are really doing a lot of things, a lot of initiatives. But in my experience, I've always seen that all you need is the awareness, right? And sometimes you see these younger girls, right, like who are just coming out of college and who are like, hey, we don't really know what we want to do with the career. And there's so much that you can do with that society because they are there are tomorrow, right? And I think that's actually the most important target, I would say, because, yeah, to influence them or to do initiatives for them, I think we can do really a lot in that space, right? So, for example, we are also doing this initiative called Women in Cybersecurity right now. We just kicked off, I think, last month, where we're trying to mentor, you know, we're a group of people from Microsoft, but we're trying to mentor these, young girls, right? I think that's another, you can think of different options, right? Like, think about workshops and get them to the office, try to inspire on, these are the different roles that we have, get their thoughts and ideas and their ambitions out as well. So I think in that space, we still have a lot of potential to do. But apart from that, in general, to be very honest, being a part of cybersecurity, I think we all know that we don't see too many women in cybersecurity as we want to see. It's changing. But even now, like if I'm looking at it, my week, and I'm looking at my customer meetings, or if I just do an analysis on the statistics, it's always been a minority, right? So I'm usually like one or two of the, 10 or 11 men sitting in the room. And that's something that we all live, it's kind of almost become normal and we've accepted it. But I think we should always kind of question that, why is that happening? Why is that not changing, So at least in cybersecurity itself, I feel that we still have a long way to go. So more initiative, more ideas, more people are definitely welcome in that space. But even in certain other fields as well, I think, there's more that we can do. And like I said, a lot of the times it's really lack of awareness. So whatever we do, it could just help trying to help people kind of envision what's going on, what's there out in the market, try to be inspirational people for them. And that brings out, the good energy that we really require. So, yeah.
I mean, I think on this podcast, we've had a lot of people from the security background join us. And I think coming up, I think got quite a few more as well. So there is, I can see it. There's a lot more women working in cybersecurity from basically all the guests that have basically approached me to join this podcast. So, it is definitely on an upward trend.
Yeah. It is, of course. We are changing and we're changing for the better. But that only means that we should not stop doing the work that we are doing, right? Because I think it's playing that catalyst kind of a role to all these, women who are actually involved in any kind of initiative, right? Within the organization, outside the organization. And we must not stop, right? It's just a sign that, hey, keep going and you're going to, see the day and the change that you actually want to see sometime in the future. So, yeah.
I mean, for me, obviously you touched on it a little bit. It's obviously you need to start attacking the younger age groups,
yes,
about getting them more involved in IT. I mean, I think that's a huge challenge in there to basically do that because, going into the world of IT is never, the cool thing to do as you're growing up as a young teenager, whether you're a boy or a girl. Because then, you get the stereotype, oh, you're a nerd and all that kind of stuff. But, end of the day, me working in IT has opened doors for me. Obviously you can see behind me, I've got, you know, my MVP certificates. I've been over to Seattle. I've done, you know, lots of different things, spoken at different conferences, because, you know, it gave me a platform. It gave me, you know, a complete career where, you know, I'm now doing this particular podcast because of the career that I've had. So I think the only way, you know, we can get more early careers into IT is by directly approaching schools and going, well, can we come in and do a particular session, whether it's basically just talking to the pupils about, you know, our careers, our experiences, and then getting them to basically go home and then think about it. I mean, obviously we have career fairs, but I mean, I went to one recently for my daughter's school, and it's like I didn't see many tech companies in there. I mean, they've got the usual come and join the army or do an apprenticeship in whatever, hair and beauty or engineering, but weren't many like tech organizations in there basically having that conversation, because I think there's not enough graduate programs available in organizations, because probably one, because of expense, and it's a shame. But I think, you know, we have to do more by going into organization or into schools and having that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And Microsoft is actually a pretty good example with, you know, the kind of programs that we have, right? I mean, we have the interns coming in. We have the Aspire program. We do a lot of initiatives to actually target these people who are freshly out of college, right? Because I think they, you know, sometimes what also happens is when you just think of Microsoft or when you just think of cybersecurity, it could be a bit overwhelming for the people who are in college, right? They might just not know, right? They might just think in their heads that, okay, this is something really huge and maybe not for me, or maybe not now. And for me, I always believe that, you know, instead of maybe I'm, you know, a little bit different to a lot of other people, but I always feel that you have to simplify something for people instead of complicating it, right? Most of the times people are just hyping something more than it is. And I always try to be as authentic as possible. And, you know, I try to say the most more authentic stuff as possible. So that's also, you know, something that we really need to do with the, you know, with the younger set, right? And try to tell them that, hey, do you know what cybersecurity is? Maybe have a simple sort of a basic beginner workshop on doing an Envision session about what cybersecurity is. Maybe it's not all that complex. Of course, it is complex, but you don't have to really overwhelm them, right? And then it could also scare them away or be like, hey, this is not for me, as an example. But even if it's a different topic or a different industry, making it something that's relatable to the youngsters, right? Or making it something that's like, hey, this could be for me. That's what we want to have as an objective. And that's a very important thing, I guess. So whether it's inspiring them to do the MS certifications that we have, or getting them to our office just playing, you know, for like a, you know, a day of learning about everything. Yeah. Why not even Minecraft and, you know, just a tour in the office and, you know, try to a little bit about, say, Xbox or whatever it is that could interest them as a beginner. And then maybe, you know, give a little bit of a session about, you know, what this particular field is and how you can actually be a part of it. And to make it very simple and relatable, right? I think that's where I feel that we're missing a lot, because we get carried away with making something bigger than it is sometimes, and then going nowhere, right? And I don't know, it just you're just going in circles and not really able to make an impact. But I feel that, yeah, it's very, very important to influence, you know, that set of people. That's always something that I feel. So, yeah.
Awesome. Right. I'm going to throw a couple of questions at you, which I normally do during the episode. So one of the ones that John likes throwing at people nowadays, and I've followed it on as well, is in your career, can you tell me about a particular issue that you encountered and how you overcome it? So something that's basically, you know, really took you aback, but it was like, you know, a really tough time where you, you know, thought about maybe giving up, and then obviously, hey, then did you overcome it?
Yeah, definitely. I think there are several, right? It's hard to pick one, I would say. But let me just talk about one of these things that happened probably earlier in my career, right? So this was, I think, with the first or second organization that I was a part of. Because later on, you kind of figure out how to manage and, you know, what you do with a certain situation with strategic thinking, I would say. But when you're still early and kind of, you know, 2 or 3 years in role or in career, then you're like a bit like, whoa, okay, maybe that's a bit big of a challenge for me to handle. So one example that I can think of is this was actually, I think, in my second organization. And so there was this project that I was working with. I had a team leader at that point of time. So I basically, you know, my interest and love for cybersecurity actually started because of, you know, him and his mentorship and, you know, the kind of things that he actually taught us as a team. So I always felt like, you know, he was always there and it was, you know, he was going to take care of it, whatever situation, however big, you know, a customer situation comes in. And it so happens that he decided to leave the organization, you know, because he got a better opportunity. He was moving countries. And then what he did was actually said he gave his whole responsibility of the project to me. And I was like, whoa, how did that happen? You know, I never even thought of it. And the project was at a very, very crucial stage because we were just about to go for production in like, you know, 6 weeks or something like that. And it was a very, very hectic situation. And for me, whenever I think of a career challenge, I always feel like, okay, you know, it's good to be like, hey, don't get scared of the challenges. Just take it up. And there are ways to figure it out, right? If you put in the right energy, there are ways for you to do it in the right way. There are people to help out. So when that happened, of course, I was happy that, you know, he's progressing in his career, but I was like, whoa, will I be able to handle it? But the fact that he trusted me with it at that point of time, I think really meant a lot to me, right? It's that teacher-student kind of a faith that I experienced. And yeah, I mean, I was just so passionate and I was working morning and evening and night and I was just going crazy. And I remember that, you know, my birthday was approaching and I was working so continuously even on the weekends. And I was like, hey, all I want is to take this one day off and let me see if that can happen. So I did manage to, you know, get that project to production, I think 2 or 3 days before my birthday, and I could take my birthday off. And yeah, that always is like a special feeling to me on, you know, sometimes even when there's something that's challenging, I think if you take it up and you're like, hey, I'm going to give it my best shot, things do work out eventually, right? So of course, you have to be ready to work hard and also, you know, have faith in yourself and always have the, you know, learning mindset, and things will eventually work out. So that's one thing that I would like to share. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think in many people's careers, obviously, we run into like some really tough times in IT because it isn't, you know, a bed of roses all the time, especially if you have customer challenges. I mean, I've had quite a few in the past. And yes, you have to work late at night, getting things sorted. You're relying on other people to do things when you spoke to them to do it, they haven't done it, so then you have to like dive in yourself and do it yourself. And I've had instances like that many times. It's like, yeah, it's fun, you know. It keeps you going. But I think as long as you get recognized for it afterwards, that is probably the main thing, because you put all that effort in, and if you don't get nothing back, then obviously you don't feel valued, and that's when you start looking at, well, is this the right place for me?
Yeah, absolutely.
So following on from that question, what is the biggest highlight from the career where you tackle something and it's just been just amazing?
As an organization, or was it, are you talking about a particular project? Could you elaborate a bit more?
Any particular item in your career that basically really stands out?
Yeah, I think this particular phase itself, right? Like one of the first and the second organization that I was a part of, because I was still new to cybersecurity back then. And cybersecurity was, it's not what it is today, right? It was still more naive, let's say. And the kind of, you know, the project that I was working for, or the tool that I was, you know, trying to develop, was also very niche. So you couldn't really find too many experts in the market or even in our organization. And when we actually landed that project into production, I think we really didn't see how big of a success it's going to be. So it really made a big difference. And I think it also made a big difference to my own career, right? Like the opportunities that I got after it. I think it had, I underestimated what it could do for me, for the organization in general. So that's definitely something that I would like to share, and also inspiring other people, right? I think there's always, you know, if you have the right people, and, you know, you have people that have the right ideas and they want to execute it, you should, not try to boil the ocean, right? And make use of all the resources, make use of all the people and everything that you have to actually make things, happen for, you know, from a result-oriented perspective. So I would actually go back to, the same project in the same period of time, because it was one of my first, let's say, the career highlights. And that always stays with me. So,
Okay. And wrapping up with my final question I always throw in. So if you had a time machine and go back and speak to your younger self, what advice would you give to her? Like, basically, everything you've learned from, you know, present day.
It's a very tough one, right? And it's very hard to, you know, I would probably give you a very long list. But I would just, you know, tell my younger self to not really be so stressed out about a lot of things, right? Like, I'm somebody who gets very like, okay, if something's on my mind, I can get a bit meticulous and be like, oh my God, how do I make this work? What do I do? And then I'm also calm and I get it through. But sometimes I overthink. So that was also the case when I was, you know, in, say, high school and college about, okay, which career, what do I do? There's so many things and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I would actually tell my younger self that, hey, you know, it's all going to work out. It's going to, you know, you're going to figure things out, because I had no idea that I'm going to ever end up in cybersecurity, because there was no cybersecurity back then, I guess. So it was very, very niche back then. So I would actually tell myself to be like, hey, chill out. And yeah, it's going to work out when it's supposed to work out. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's all we can do. I mean, we've had many like different answers to that question. But so for me, it's just, you know, take one day at a time, because, you know, there will be challenges along the way. You will have, you know, some highs, you will have some lows. But as long as you keep focusing on what you're doing, then, you know, that's the key thing. Then your self-happiness is most important, because if you're not happy in your life, you're not going to be happy in your career, you're not going to be happy at home. So therefore, you know, just make sure that you're doing things that you enjoy, but then also looking at the bigger picture as well, or how you can basically have an impact in the world.
Exactly. And maybe just to touch upon this as a final note as well, there's this concept in Japanese concept called Ikigai. Maybe you already know about it. This is something that I really believe is very powerful, right? Ikigai basically says, find your purpose, right? That's what it means. At the end of the day, we are so busy, but we always have to ask that, hey, what is my purpose in life, okay, in your profession, on your personal life? So if you have your Ikigai in place, then I think you're, you know, things are working out and you're in the right space and, you know, things will work out as well. So as a final note, because I already told you that I love psychology, this is a book that I also, you know, would like, you know, the listeners to kind of, you know, pick up and read if they haven't yet. But the idea is, find your Ikigai, right? That's the most important, I would say.
Awesome. I'll find that link to that book and stick it in the show notes so people can go and go make a purchase on Amazon. Yes, I don't get any royalties for it. That's a shame, but, you know, hopefully it helps people. But, yeah, so thank you for joining me today and obviously sharing your story. So it's always nice to meet new people, and I say it nearly every single episode, you know, because everyone has a different story. Everyone has a different entry point into the world of IT, and everyone has different passions. But ultimately, we all work in the same space, so we all need to come together and, you know, support each other.
Yes, absolutely. It's all about the community feeling. And thank you so much. And again, kudos to you. And I'm really, really glad with, you know, this initiative that you're doing, especially when you said the male ally part. I think, yeah, you're a living example of what people can learn to be. And the fact that you're doing this for now several years already, and you're, you know, keeping it going, and you're getting so many people also interested. And yeah, kudos and more energy to more initiatives like this.
Yes, I say, at some point, I don't know. I've got so many episodes all lined up for this final couple of quarters of the year. It's mental. I mean, I say, you know, I've got that much content we're going to be recorded. I'm going to have to change my release schedule to probably, you know, every 2 days at this rate, because I say I've got, you know, as I said, I've got two episodes I need to edit prior to this one. Then I'm recording this one today. Then I've got literally like a 10-minute break, and then we're recording another one tonight, got another one tomorrow. Whoa. So yeah, it's very busy in my household when it comes to this podcast at the minute.
Yeah, as long as you're busy with the things that you're, you know, you find a reason you also love, then it's great to be that busy. So yeah.
So thank you again for joining me today.
My pleasure.
Everyone else, make sure you hit that like, share, and subscribe button and follow us. And if hopefully this episode will be out before the end of the voting, so please vote for us at the South Coast Summit to be, you know, the Social Impact Award, because say I would love to be able to come to this podcast and show off my little trophy, but you know, we've got the people up against are, you know, fully deserving the award as well, and I've been on this podcast, so I wish them all the best as well. But everyone else, I will see you next time. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for being a fantastic guest today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Microsoft Spotlight podcast. Please make sure you hit that like, share, and subscribe button to help us promote our message. You can also follow us on Twitter at MSFT Spotlight, and we're also on LinkedIn, the Microsoft Spotlight podcast. And finally, we'd like to tell you a little bit about BitTitan and thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
Remote migrations start here. Let MigrationWiz do the work for you. It's fast, secure, and 100% SaaS, which means you can migrate at any time and from anywhere. migrate mailboxes, documents, public folders, personal archives, or even Microsoft Teams with just a few clicks. No special training needed, and no customer downtime. When the work matters, choose MigrationWiz.